Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 804. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
Well, it is the week of Thanksgiving here for us in the United States. Weirdly, there are people not in the United States that listen to this podcast sometimes, so, you know. If you're one of those people, God bless. Anyway, we actually prepared.
Wait, hold on. Is Scripps Reginald? Reggie?
Oh my God!
Is that who Scripps is?
I was not aware of this result. It could be why one Mr. Mays is just completely in awe of what is happening in NXT currently.
That makes sense. That makes the videos I see and the gifs I've seen, make sense of what other stuff he was doing. Neither of us have watched NXT tonight, by the way. So we're catching up right now, the old-fashioned way, Twitter.
yeah.
Apparently, this Scripps character that has been terrorizing the Performance Center for what feels like months now is Reggie, in a very, very poor costume. Like, some of the worst gear I've ever seen.
Some of the most
gear I have ever seen in my life. I cannot believe it made it to USA Network.
Are we talking worse than Karrion Kross when he was pulled up to the main roster? But I still have not seen it.
That was different. That was bad in another way.
That's fair.
They tried with that one. It was bad, but they tried.
Okay, I can hear what you're throwing down there.
Okay, let me send you a picture right now, so you can look at it.
Oh man. So yeah. This is a heck of a way to start things off, I suppose.
This feels more like a Maze show, I'm sure. I'm assuming. All right, so I sent the pic.
Oh, it's
the Facebooks.
Oh. And, that is not good. That is not good at all. I mean, there's a lot of work that goes into that. It doesn't seem like it conforms to his head at all. The kind of the warrior points on it stick out too far from his face. Man. Fan of the Keller scheme, not good execution.
That is definitely Reggie.
Yes.
That's got to be who that is. Yes, that's definitely it.
Definitely Reggie. 100% Reggie. I am really looking forward to watching NXT, I suppose, here now. It seems like it's going to be something else.
Yeah, and they invested a lot of time in that, too. For it to just be some guy doing a bunch of flips. What a weird build-up, and what a weird... What a weird payoff for all of this.
Yeah, it's a really interesting choice, to say the least.
He's
one of those guys that I would definitely say, hey, we need a character reboot on this. We need to do something else. And I feel like by all counts, he did not have that much experience when he was on the main roster, if I'm not mistaken.
I mean his beginning in WWE really, you know, saw him wrestling women and losing, and then he was moved to the 24/7 situation where he never really wrestled a full match either.
Oh, right, yeah. You just had to. He did some acrobatics. He is very good at acrobatics. But yeah, I mean, that is what's Ricochet can string things together better than that.
But it hasn't done him any favors,
and he's not even close to a Ricochet conversation.
No, there's. I guess that's why he's back in. He's down in NXT. Well, I don't see it back because he never went in the first place. He's someone they just found doing backflips or whatever somewhere and doing Cirque du Soleil, and they just threw him on TV with Nia and Sasha and whoever else they did. Carmella was the original.
Oh yes, yeah, because that was she. Butler? I forget what...
Yeah, she was... What for somebody who serves you wine and...
A sommelier. Wine list. Yeah, he was the sommelier. Yes. Oh my gosh. Bringing back so many memories I don't want to have memories of. I mean, I think he needed a reinvention. This does not seem like it. I don't know if this is one of those, I suppose I would love to hear the origin story, if this is how involved he was in this gimmick. But yeah, that mask is, that is... just not a good start. When you have a bad look, it's really going to hamper your gimmick.
Yeah.
Foof. Wow. Rip Reggie, I guess.
I'm sorry. Somebody's got him onto Twitter. It's hilarious about this whole thing. I know this is not make for good audio. I know that. I definitely have to watch NXT very soon. I might not wait for the commercial free Peacock version. I might just watch it. at least Hulu with the ads.
Oh man, yeah, that's. That's going to be an interesting watch here. Since neither of us did watch that, at least one of us watched AEW Full Gear. But there are certainly plenty of talking points that one did not necessarily need to see the pay-per-view to know how to talk about it. Do we start at the very tippy top? Tony Khan has learned finally to end a pay-per-view before midnight. Thank God and hallelujah for small favors. With that out of the way, just before that, MJF uses... he's William Regal, right?
Yes.
Okay. He uses William Regal's brass knucks to knock out the Jon Moxley and attain the AEW championship. Yeah, there are a lot of notable things about this. To me, it was the night, the culmination of AEW doing something to me that is inexplicable, yet everyone's cheering. It seems par for the course and quite acceptable in AEW to cheat the win. Like, yes. It is not frowned upon in any manner whatsoever. It is actually like, hey, if you're not doing it, you're not doing this whole AEW thing right now. And it's something. I am personally baffled by this whole phenomenon. What are your thoughts in general about?
Well, AEW has fallen into plot tropes constantly. Every match has someone, at least one person, who's technically not a manager and should not be at ringside. Every match has outside interference. Every match has people getting distracted. And then, of course, the backstage stuff where everyone cutting a promo backstage gets interrupted. It's gotten really... I am not a big fan of AEW since... Probably you can even trace it back to the spring, even before everything fell out and after All Out. It's been a... They've got this bloated roster, adding all the ROH wrestlers... And more importantly, the title belts did not help it. Didn't help any situation. Yeah, it feels like there's a sameness to a lot of what's going on there. Yeah, Tony Khan. When Punk went down with that initial foot injury, he just had zero ability to adapt, and still struggling to catch up from that. From that point, I mean, thankfully for him, he had Moxley. Carried the torch through the summer. But I would say that now this Moxley title reign, this last Moxley title reign after everything went down, only lasted about 6 weeks. He defended it once or twice.
Oh, no, he defended it entirely too often. Actually, like.
I don't know if all those were technically title matches, but yeah, he wrestled on TV way too much.
That's true.
He's the Bizarro Roman Reigns. He's always on TV wrestling, being in competitive matches with people who are quite frankly beneath him, and it hurt his title reign, and the other thing that hurt his title reign was pretty much wrestling baby faces most of the time, because AEW's heel situation, it doesn't get talked about enough. How dire AEW's heel situation is at this point. Only other than MJF and Jericho, no one's really got a lot of heat, and they aren't really in positions to get a lot of heat. So, the decision to run with MJF as a heel champion, reaffirming himself as a heel, in theory, it's the right decision because the way AEW likes to do their business, and this is. We're just coming out of Full Gear. The gap between Full Gear and Revolution is really, really long. It's too long, really, for a wrestling company in this day and age. But they do like to do their special episodes of Dynamite about once a month. They give it a fancy name.
Oh yeah.
It felt like over the summer that they're giving their shows fancy names every week.
It got a little too frequent over the summer, but it does feel like they've cut back in the last 2 months.
Yeah, they've cut back on that. I know there's one in the middle of the summer that might be the one where the World Title Eliminator Tournament winner, most likely Ricky Starks, gets his title shot, and that's fine. But again, they have baby faces. To build up to these once-a-month title matches. They really don't have the heels. Unless you want to, try to rebuild Archer again, it's just like, all their B and C heels that, fell to Paige, they fell to Moxley already. And, so it's hard to build up any of those back up. But they have plenty of baby faces they can use in that position. So having a heel champion, I think, was absolutely essential. The problem will be, can him? So MJF's promo on Dynamite this week is very much going to be the most important promo of his career. He is going to have to get the crowd back against him again. I don't know if they can do it. And because of the, and it, largely because of the issues you brought up, that, you know, no one is outraged by cheating. That, you know, no. The crowd pops for cheating. The announcers go the WWE route of saying, well, he took advantage of an opportunity. Who can you blame him? No, you're supposed to be, no, only Taz should be saying that. Shivani and Excalibur should be going, should be losing their shit when things like that happen.
Yeah, that I guess that is kind of where the failure is, like you said, like, especially since that's mostly the trio that works. I mean, I suppose Jim Ross is there, but I even feel like Jim Ross is on the just roll with the cheating train. Like, I don't even think he's outraged, and it's just like, or maybe there's just so little of him now that I forget that he does it.
Jim Ross can't bring it out of himself anymore. That's the sad bottom line. He can't do his outraged Jim Ross voice. My God, not like this, you demon. He can't. You son of a bitch. He can't do that anymore. He just doesn't care enough. He really can't. Or his health is that bad that he can't stress himself out. That he's got to, you know. Or he's on some medication or what have you. He can't. He just can't do that anymore.
Right.
For whatever reason. But there's no excuses for Shivani, especially Excalibur, who's like half their age. So, Excalibur is just too, I don't want to say robotic, but he's too focused on the moves. He's too matter of fact in how his commentary is. There's not a lot of conversation or emotion with this calendar. And that hurts things too.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like that guy needs different partners.
I do think him and Taz can be fun, but for some reason they're married to the third guy. They brought Shivani out of retirement. It's Shivani does a good job. Shivani does a pretty good job usually too. I mean, the bloom was maybe a little off the rose of it feeling special to hear him again because it's now we're 3 years into this, but Shivani's still okay.
Yeah, he's moved from. I enjoy him to it's. I think some of it's just getting a little long in the tooth. I guess they haven't really as much stressed the allegiance between him and Britt Baker. He's still put in a lot of weird spots though too, like because they kind of present him as the pal too. You know, just on screen, like some of the wrestlers just even feed into it, like on top of Britt Baker. And it's just like, how can you not, you know, like it's one of those, I don't like it, but I guess I understand. Maybe I don't understand people liking it, but it's kind of clear that, I mean, you keep on doing it because someone likes it, correct? At least that's the thinking, isn't it? Because, I mean, he has all these in-ring interviews with big names, and there's always, there's the cut the shit Tony with Jade Cargill. Like, he even has, like, kind of gimmicks with some of these people, too. He's in a weird spot. Like, he'd almost be better as a dedicated backstage / in-ring guy rather than coming back to the booth. Like, I think that's been one of the better things that's honestly happened to Byron Saxton recently. because he's been in more fun stuff post announcing career than, I mean, I guess it's still announcing, but he has better parts now. So, but yeah, all the announcers are still kind of like, yeah, they're mostly, like you said, they're mostly silent about the cheating thing. And yet I don't think there's any way that MJF gets the crowd against him. Like, the crowd was kind of against Jon Moxley during the pay-per-view.
Yeah, I mean Moxley in the lead up was disrespecting MJF. He was acting more heelish.
Oh. And
then during the match, he was the aggressor. But then in the end, of course, you know, Regal decides to turn on against Moxley and the Becko Comic Club and go with MJF. Again, everything they're doing makes sense. Now, again, you know, take people to the edge of an MJF heel turn. Excuse me, face turn, and then fuck him over in the air. That was the way this should have gone. But the question is, was it strong enough? Is this Regal? Can Regal get himself enough heat at this point, or is Regal kind of this elder statesman? People, you know, people have a lot of respect for. So it's like you can't really hate him either. And
that's something that honestly I hadn't thought about myself. I think it's a good point, though. He is kind of in that everyone respect, especially fans of AEW, really respect his work, and it's just like, oh, this is kind of a weird spot for him to be in here.
Yeah. It is a weird spot for him to be in. Once again, he has all sorts of health problems. I'm shocked that the people, they had, you know, the firm rufflers put their hands on him as much as they even did last week, because he's got all sorts of health problems. He really shouldn't be being touched out there. He definitely shouldn't be taking any bumps, or damn sure not have another match again. So there's, you know, where's the heat there? How do you, you know, Moxley will, you know, there's no getting his hands on William Regal.
Oh.
With knowledge of Regal's health.
Yeah.
You can't really go there. So again, you already had all the issues with MJF, or, you know, they may have went too far in the other direction with MJF, with them allowing MJF to be cheered. But in fact, I know they did.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see what they do, but AEWs, once again, they have no other heels. Jericho is the only other heel who's allowed to get any real heat.
And he definitely acts heel. Like, that's one of the few times where Tony Schiavone gets indignant about the cheating.
Yes. Yeah, and I'm sure Jericho is whispering in their ear to make that, you know, for that to be happening. I'm sure Jericho knows that he needs to be the bastard out there. You know, the one person that everyone thinks is awful. And, you know, it works, but no one wants to see Jericho back in that AEW world title picture again for a while either. So you really can't run with him.
Well, and I mean, he still has that love-hate thing with the crowd too, because everyone's still singing the entrance song.
Yes, and that's an issue too. Yeah. That definitely is an issue. Once again, AEW, you know, a lot of it goes back to Cody Rhodes when he was doing some media interview and he mentioned good bases and heels are passe and there's shades of gray in life and all that and AEW has kind of live by that, especially in recent times. They've had this was their third pay-per-view in a row, not even counting Forbidden Door, which is also a babyface match, but that doesn't really count as much, where there was a lot of, it was essentially a babyface versus babyface match, and there was a lot of ambiguity over who the crowd was supposed to cheer for. It, you know, it was that way for Punk versus Hangman.
Oh.
It was damn sure that way for Punk versus Moxley, and, you know, Moxley versus MJF turned into that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even
with Roman Reigns starting to get more cheers himself, they definitely, the WWE, this is where I get hung up. They are definitely, a lot of times they are still positioning Jericho and MJF as heels, even if they do get the cheers.
Yeah.
But I don't know, to kind of go with your point too, though, I don't know who else they really do that for in the company.
No, there's a lot of apathy with their heels. You know, no one cares about Sammy Guevara. Nobody cares about, you know, they've beaten Archer too many times. You know, you can't put that genie back in the bottle. As far as being a viable world title contender.
Yeah, he'll get TV time, and I'm good with that because he's a good wrestler. But yeah,
because they like to do these Dynamite title matches, and they don't really rematch people a lot. They run through these challengers, and AEW hasn't had a solid heel champion really since Jericho. Well, no, it's not since Omega. But Omega scaled back that idea of the champion who wrestles so often on TV. Omega didn't wrestle as much on TV. We later learned it was because his body was falling apart. But it was actually refreshing. You know what? It was actually refreshing that Omega, you know, was able to, you know, Omega was able to stay heel for as long and get the build to the Hangman match. You know, a classic heel babyface story that worked and is one of the. One of the two biggest buy rates in AEW history, by the way. other than the Punk's first show. So, you know, they made that work. And once again, he was a heel champion. AEW's problem isn't, you know, in having the assembly line of baby faces for a heel champion to face. It's having the assembly line of heels for a baby face champion to face at this point. I mean, I don't know. I have no idea where Miro is. He could fill that void. Maybe Malachi Black could fill that void once he's back up and running. And
well, that was one where you just mentioned his name, and I'm like, not that I needed him on the pay-per-views, I suppose, but I feel like they've done the vignettes, and I'm like, are they back yet? Or maybe they were just waiting for... for the pay-per-view to be over to really bring them back.
To not put them in a weird spot
of not being on the show, you know?
Yeah, I could see that.
But he still kind of needs a little bit of work, honestly.
This will buy them time. They need to go. They need to build some heels up. I mean, the next MJF's first title match is likely going to be in that Winter Is Coming show in the middle of December. I imagine it'll be against Ricky Starks because I don't think it'll be against Ethan Page. good opponent for MJF. Good spot for Ricky Starks. MJF isn't losing the title already, but that will be fine. And they're also in Texas, so deep in Texas and. Starks is from Texas, so it shouldn't be that bad. As far as his reaction compared to MJF's, you know, there's things they can do, but you know, once again, if they don't turn this tide, you know, MJF is going to be wrestling Darby Allin or Jungle Boy, in title matches, and they're going to be getting booed, and he's going to be getting cheered, and those are going to be rough situations.
Oh man, yeah, that's gonna be real interesting to see to see what goes on there. Yeah, that's it's a situation that I suppose is just going to play out over time, and see how things go here. I guess, are there any other? It felt like, yeah, did all of the, I'm trying to remember if all of the titles changed hands.
I haven't even watched the show, but no, I don't
Not
think they
all of
all
them.
did.
I forgot.
I don't know if half of them did. I have no
The
idea.
Acclaimed retained.
The Acclaimed retained, Death Triangle retained,
Death Triangle retained. And
Jim Cornette
then
retained,
yeah, Tony
Jericho retained. Toni Storm is the only other person who lost the title, I believe.
Oh yeah. You know what? There were actually only two losses. I guess there is so much cheating. I forgot that the I mistook the cheating for losses for some reason, or had that in my brain. I guess, what do you think about the other title change then? That was really kind of what I was trying to get to, honestly. Jamie Hayter.
It seems this whole thing it's such a mess with whatever's going on with Thunder Rosa and the Real World Championship. The interim title has been dragging on for, a while. It maybe doesn't feel so much longer than it's actually been, but we've already had an interim title change in the time it's taken for Thunder Rosa to heal up from her back injury. There's people who speculate it's not as bad as she's making out to be, or she's even faking it. I don't know. I'm not her doctor. But to have the interim title already change in 6 weeks, well, or 8 weeks or whatever it was, well, it's the interim championship, so we've already gotten one interim title change while we're waiting for Thunder Rosa to get back. Now, for what they're doing storyline wise with Jamie Hayter and Britt Baker, Hayter coming out the champion, and Britt having to, at least for now, seem happy about that seems like where we were going even before All Out, and even before Thunder Rosa's, in Thunder Rosa's, injury.
Yeah, this has been a weird situation with them. 'Cause Britt Baker did at least seem genuinely excited about the situation for now.
Almost too much. Almost like she was really getting emotional about her friend winning the title and not even playing it at all. Like, okay, I gotta put on a brave face here. I don't actually want this, but no. From what I saw, she seemed to be genuinely touched by her real life friend, winning the title. Which I guess
Yes.
so she didn't play with any ambiguity. Which, once again, if we're taking a longer game here, then that's fine. And Baker's coming off of a big loss anyway, so you really can't justify a title her in a title match, anytime too soon. Although I guess they do anyway. But they do a lot of multiple person matches in AEW.
Oh, yeah.
So, but no, I mean, it's fine. I like Jamie Hayter. It does feel like every month in AEW, it's one step forward, two steps back for Toni Storm. Who's
Oh.
really probably not going to be in the mix much going forward, because it's going to be about Britt. It will eventually be about doing the unification match with Thunder Rosa. They're obviously going to push Saraya now, so yeah, I could see Miss Storm ending up on the back burner in all this.
Yeah, like that's one where I just sit there and go, wow, man. I don't know if she dropped the ball. I mean, I know that obviously Vince was still in charge, and they, yeah, the pie incident was obviously pretty bad. But, oof, man, her situation hasn't, I mean, it's been better, but it has been really rocky in AEW.
It has been. It's been very inconsistent. Once again, it's been that it's that shiny new toy principle, and maybe someone else. First of all, Tony Khan does not seem that committed to his women's division. I think that's pretty obvious. And it's the shiny new toy principle or paradox of, someone new is going to come along and get that temporary push. It'll happen to Saraya. It's once again, Tony Khan needs to focus. He needs to spin off ROH into its own thing, move the excess roster over there, and then refocus it and reset AEW.
Yeah, and it does not seem like that's in the works to for that to happen.
It doesn't seem to, does it?
He seems to keep on saying in the press conferences that he's hopeful, but I'm like, dude, you've been saying that you're hopeful for several months now. Or
Yes,
like
he's very
not
hopeful.
several months, like it didn't we say that the purchase was like April or something like that at the last show?
I think it was March.
March,
Yeah, it was
okay.
March. We still got no word on this. Every few months, the speculation there and rumors start. Oh, the HBO Max deal for AEW is imminent, and it never comes to pass. Which would be a huge, because that's somewhere they could drop ROH as an exclusive show. If there's not really room for it on the TBS or TNT lineup.
Oh,
But
yeah.
that keeps not happening. And it's just, they just have this bloated roster, inconsistent storytelling. You'll go weeks without seeing certain people on the show, and then they'll just show up, and you're supposed to care. This ROH stuff, the Jay Lethal, the amount of TV time Jay Lethal and Sanjay Dutt get. It's
Oof.
all this weird mishmash of
Oh.
ideas. It's not a consistent, coherent show. Once again, Dynamite was my favorite weekly wrestling show for quite a while. Actually, right now, I'm not even sure if I really have one, because none of the weekly shows have been strong with much consistency in the last couple of months. If I had to pick
It's
me.
not been great, Jim.
No. I mean, for a while, it was probably Raw, but that's the honeymoon period for Triple H has been over for the last month or so, and there's definitely strung together some blah episodes there. So yeah, I don't know what to say my favorite weekly wrestling show is, but it did for about a 2 year period. At least used to be Dynamite, and it really hasn't been for a while. And it's even probably even before All Out. Because once again, these issues of the bloated roster and the inconsistency and the lack of focus on things that are actually are gonna drive you some ratings and make you some money have been going on for a while. And you could probably pinpoint it, at beginning around the time these ROH wrestlers and titles were added to the show. Hell,
Oh.
I can directly blame Jay, I can directly blame Jay, put the blame on when they brought in Jay Lethal. It's like, jeez, stop the pain.
And they do, they seem intent on not stopping the pain anytime soon, unfortunately.
No.
Well, and I kind of forgot. This was another one where I knew that there was at least one other title change. And kind of speaking of tied in with the ROH stuff, Samoa Joe won the TNT Championship. So
That is right. Yes,
now
he
is double champ, but he's supposed to be in both brands? Question mark, I guess.
that'll be interesting. Now, yeah. Now this final battle show coming up probably needs all the help it could get. So if they're gonna maybe do the Samoa Joe Wardlow one-on-one match there, that would probably be an idea to have, because once again, obviously, they once again they took a WWE inspired route and had Joe beat Hobbs to take Wardlow's title.
Oh,
um,
yes.
so you know so once again, that singles, that Wardlow Joe singles match, that sure, could certainly garner some interest. That's still dangling out there, but with Joe having both titles already, you'd think you'd want the unification match, some type of unification match, to just be a one-on-one match with each of them walking in with a championship. So once again, having
Oh.
Joe be TNT champion, and oh my, wow, has Wardlow just been? He has just been undermined ever since Double or Nothing. And it sucks because they really had something there, and it's basically gone. I mean, he's still impressive. He's still big. He's still impressive.
Yeah, they're getting a good
there's still some
reaction,
buzz around.
but they're not getting a great reaction.
No, there's still some buzz, but it's after MJF pulled the crap that he pulled, and they did the whole work shoot thing. It started waning right there. I mean, I like the idea of Wardlow as TNT champion because it harkened to the days of the Ultimate Warrior being Intercontinental champion before he became world champion, or Goldberg was US champion before he became world champion.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what it should have been, but it wasn't. Once again, the inconsistency and lack of focus. There were weeks that weeks would go. There were multiple weeks that would go by without Wardlow being on Dynamite. He got and he got stuck in this ROH vortex and the embassy with the embassy and Brian Cage and the two Big Island boys and all that. Yeah,
Yeah, he really got off track.
he definitely got off track. It was not a good thing for him. And yeah, it's unfortunate because I don't know if for guys like Wardlow, like Warrior, like Goldberg, when things go off track, it's hard to get back on. And he never got to have the run that those guys had that made them, legendary.
Oh.
He never got to be. By the time things started waiting for those guys, they'd already been world champions for a while and had their runs. It was good for those guys to go away for a while and come back, away for a while and come back, and so on and so forth. Wardlow never made it that far before the wheels went off the
Yeah,
track.
and that poor sucker had to say out loud that he was. Wasn't he waiting for CM Punk to be champion to challenge?
Yeah,
Oh.
because they needed an excuse for him for him to not be in the tournament they were doing.
Yeah.
For the interim title tournament deal and the Battle Royal. That's right, the Battle Royal before. Oh yeah, that convoluted mess before Forbidden Door that somehow saw a match between Tanahashi and Hirooki Goto in Japan for the number one contendership for the AEW championship, even though no other guy had ever been set foot in AEW before. They did an excuse so that Wardlow didn't get eliminated in the Battle Royal all the time. So he said that, yeah, he was going to wait for the real champion, completely burying the whole interim concept of the first night. And then he was never in line for a world title shot during the entire any time after Punk came back with Moxley or anybody else. So, and now he's in a feud with over the secondary championship for two promotions championships. Which, once again, not a bad. Once again, Joseph Ware was essentially in the in the Intercontinental scene for nearly 2 years before he became world champion. Goldberg's rise was a lot more lightning quick. But he's kind of a Wardlow. The way he's been pushed has been the cross between Warrior, Goldberg, and Batista at various points. Batista, especially because the way that they drew out the turn against MJF, in the same way that they drew out the WWE drew out the Batista turn against Triple H.
Oh. Yeah, I can see the similarities there.
But with all three of those other guys, they followed through to the end. With Wardlow, they really haven't. We'll see what happens. We'll see if he gets his TNT Championship back and can beat Samoa Joe. Once again, maybe this is just an attempt to pour some gasoline on Final Battle as a big show. So obviously, you get that match. You'll get a Jericho title defense on it. Although Jericho title defense, I have no idea what they're going to do with Jericho at this point. Like, I don't think he can. I don't think he can face Danielson and Castagnoli again.
It would be a little much. It feels like. That's one of those feuds that it feels like it's been going on forever, but I doubt that it actually has been.
It just kept going and going and going until, well, Regal pretty much disbanded the Blackpool Combat Club.
All it took was one night for things to change overnight. And that's I guess that is going to be kind of the interesting part in this whole thing, to see what happens tomorrow here. There's a lot to be talked about, I suppose. It's going to be interesting to see some justifications. And what does happen to the Blackpool Combat Club? Like, I guess there isn't really a whole lot of reason for them to be together.
No, and there really wasn't as much in the first place. It was an idea that never, I don't think, ever fully formed either, because there were so many times Moxley didn't feel like he wanted to be associated with them, only for the MJF angle did Regal start coming to the ring with Moxley again. Danielson and Castagnoli almost immediately, and Wheeler Yuta almost immediately started having issues with each other. There was the ridiculously stupid double swerve with Daniel Garcia, who was another one of these people with absolutely no juice, no heat, no buzz around him at all. He's not going to be your most charismatic guy to begin with. But establishing him as Jericho's secondary flunky after Sammy Guevara. it did him no favors.
No, not a great spot to be in when you're the number two or the number three of the group. Not a great spot, Jim. It's okay if you're like in the tag team and you're kind of a separate situation. It's a whole different thing to be the number three of a group, all by your lonesome. So, Daniel Garcia. Not that going with the Blackpool Combat Club necessarily would have been the solution to that whole equation, but it couldn't have been any worse than his current fate, that's for sure. I'm trying to think if there's anything else to touch on from the pay-per-view. I guess there is just, in general, the return of the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega. You know, I know that you didn't see it, but hey, you
I've
know.
seen their entrance. I did see their entrance.
I guess I still don't get it.
Apparently, they wanted to use that song for years.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that I'm just like, okay, like I like the song, but I don't feel like there's a connection anywhere there. And like that's the part where I kind of feel a little left out. I'm like, I don't,
Yeah,
you know,
and
I
what
love lots of
people were trying
songs.
to make a I mean, people were trying to make a connection with the lyric about there will be peace when you are done, as to be meaning CM Punk. But apparently, once again, they've wanted to enter that song for years,
Yeah, oh.
so it doesn't really affect. So it really doesn't. I mean, I guess it could correlate it, damn. But
it's
okay, it's something they
it
want.
seems like
It's a
more
song that they like. They want to
fortuitous
use.
timing than an intentional CM Punk slap in the face, is what you're saying. So yeah, so it's a little strange. It's yeah, I feel like I need a connection there. I mean, again, I like the song. I suppose it was kind of a fun entrance. I didn't get as excited about it by as a lot of people did. I will definitely say that much. And yeah, I guess it seemed like the right time to bring them back.
Yeah, it definitely did. I mean, I'm not sure about this whole best of seven thing because, and there once again, the videos and GIFs went around. The spots in the six man in the trios match where they got too cute. So I'm not sure that these guys really bring out the best in each other all the time. Unless you really do like those cute spots, I have a lower, maybe have a higher tolerance than some, maybe but a lower tolerance than many for the things like the six-way super kick spot where everyone misses super kick at the same time. And still, and it's also still part of this. It's just like it feels like Kenny Omega, especially, is slumming it in this trio stuff. It's weird because they're already setting up for him to go to the Tokyo Dome to wrestle Will Ospreay, and that'll be unless Omega has a singles match in the next 6 weeks on in AEW TV, that'll end up being Omega's first singles match in over a year. It's so weird that New Japan is going to be getting Omega in a singles match while he's going to be stuck wrestling the same guy six more times in a trios match. And then if they horse if they if they win this whole thing, then of course he's still stuck with the Young Bucks in a trios act and not back in the
Title
in the
contention.
singles match. Not back in title contention. Now MJF versus Kenny Omega. Definitely somewhere you need to go, but we should build to it, and maybe it
Oh.
shouldn't even be the Revolution match. Maybe you hold that off to later, the Double or Nothing or All Out, later in the summer. It'll be fine. So maybe Omega needs something to do until we get there, because I think MJF is going to be wrestling the various members. He's going to be wrestling whatever baby faces they throw at him. Plus, Moxley's going to want another crack at him. Danielson's going to want a crack at him. Those would be acceptable main events of Revolution. Not so much Cassius Ohno. He would be more of a Dynamite level challenger who isn't going to win.
Yeah, Tony is not in any better spot than he was in the WWE, also.
No, not particularly, especially late.
He got the ROH title reign, so it's not a complete bust.
It's not a complete bust, but the only world title you ever won in wrestling being the ROH title after ROH has actually ceased to exist as its own independent entity. It doesn't feel like this big culmination of his entire career moment.
It feels like winning the ECW championship when it was definitely part of the WWE brand.
It's probably lower than that, honestly.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. You know. Hey. You know. Fair enough.
At least ECW had its own show.
That is a fair point. That is a fair point. They did have their own kind of NXT style deal there to air their own product. And yeah, ROH 9 months and going without a TV deal. And, my poor buddy Ian Riccoboni. Oh, boy. Anywho. Was there anything else to talk about AEW-wise?
I think we did AEW pretty good here. We got over an hour out of AEW. Or just about an hour out of AEW since we click record. So, if we want to just play the hits of WWE's week and get out of here, we can certainly do that. It's been a while since you and I have talked about AEW, so that ended up really nice. I didn't think it was going to go an hour, but it was a good different type of conversation. So, but we can wrap things up. I guess talking about. Maybe a little, I guess, previewing and reviewing the goings on heading into the War Games matches at Survivor Series.
Well, you know, that was one of those situations where I guess it did not completely hit me that War Games was going to be on what my family has is Thankmas, Thanksgiving, Christmas mashup on Saturday there. So there is a zero chance that I watch it on Saturday night. Considering I'm traveling back to Columbus on Sunday, there's a pretty low percentage chance that I watch it on Sunday. I might catch it Sunday night at best. Oof, man, that's a weirdly timed pay-per-view for yours truly. I will say that. I'm kind of interested just to watch the execution of a War Games match with a full set of professional wrestlers, but that would really be insulting to pretty much everyone in NXT, because all of them were veterans of wrestling by the time they had a War Games match.
Yeah, no, I mean it's something special to see it on a main roster WWE show. Because if Vince wasn't adamant against it, it wouldn't have taken 20 years for it to happen. It's good in that way. It's a big deal. It should be a fun show. Once again, it puts none of the major titles at stake in either of the two matches. But they've done a good job. They've done a good job, setting up. I mean, the men's War Games was kind of felt more thrown together. The babyface team, but it's a good babyface team. I mean, Pete Dunne Pete Dunne and Rich Holland are going to get the main event of WWE pay per view.
And they do present Butch pretty well still. They give him a little more of a, he's got to act a little bit more like a Tasmanian devil, or at least the cartoon that I used to watch as a child. But hey, he's definitely got his spot, and the crowd seems to dig the whole Brawling Brutes thing. He's weirdly found himself in a good spot after the whole the whole Oliver Twist poor people gimmick was a little much. I'm glad that it's kind of been transitioned out of that. But yeah, they're good foils. Drew McIntyre is an obvious ally since him and Sheamus mostly have been friends in the WWE. I know that the more recent stuff has been feuding. It's always easy to make up though after an extended time period where they really didn't face each other though since that breakup feud. Yeah, also making his debut this past well, not debut, but making his inclusion known in the match was Kevin Owens this past Friday.
Yeah, that was really, really well done. The crowd went nuts in the way that they don't always go nuts for at WWE television events. So it was really great to see once again. I'm glad he's okay to good. He's good to work the show because really, for what this storyline is with him and Sam, his history with Sami Zayn, and where it's likely going afterward. He was the only one on the babyface team that's essential to being there, and you could change out any of the other four, but he's the essential one as far as where this. Now, once again, it's the graphic is interesting to me because it is centering Sheamus as the
Oh.
team captain. Now, granted, he didn't lay down the initial challenge; it was to start with it, the Brutes. But it's good to see. And you know
Yeah.
what? If this can lead to a Sheamus Roman Reigns title match, say at the Royal Rumble, I'm all for it. Great.
Yeah, I mean Sheamus, I think he's fallen under the lockdown COVID pandemic MVPs,
He
and
definitely was, yeah.
he's definitely continued quality work ever since then. You
Yes, oh
know,
yeah.
like he has not really let up at all. Even though I did not like the whole Oliver Twist look that they were doing there for a while, I still enjoyed the act for the most part, because they at least didn't act Oliver Twist like. And yeah, man, it's been a lot of fun this whole late career, or I don't know if it's really late career, but definitely later in his
Oh,
career.
it's definitely later in his career. Later in his career. Yeah,
Because
it's been really fun.
I forget how long ago sometimes that Jeremy met him, since that was the Atlanta WrestleMania, and that's a long time ago. Because was that 30?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
That was 12. Atlanta was 27. So that's
Yeah.
going on 12 years ago. So
So
yeah, no,
yeah,
Sheamus and Sheamus had already been multiple time world champion by that point. Yeah.
yes. Yes. That is also a key point to that story. So yeah, Sheamus has definitely been around a long time, and it's yeah, like what it that's one of those ones where he had that whatever weird injury situation going on that he was shelved for the longest time. And it was one of those ones where you could tell that Vince really wasn't fully invested in him until,
No,
the pandemic time
until
period,
the really pandemic time
basically.
period. No, I mean, he had a great run with the bar. I think the
Oh,
bar was when
yeah.
I think that really was the start of people, paying some notice to Sheamus. Then there was an injury sometime after that run ended. And he didn't, yeah, he, and because that's when he grew his hair back out. When he came back after the injury, and we were in pandemic time at the Thunderdome.
Yeah. Oh. I believe. Yeah. Yeah. So it's.
And we went a little before that.
Yeah. So that is pretty cool to see him centered in there. Roman Reigns kind of needs someone to face, honestly. And Sheamus makes a lot of sense. And honestly, Kevin Owens also makes a lot of sense. For some reason, I thought that Owens pinned him at some point and had that over his head, but he didn't mention it this week. So I feel that wasn't quite the case.
No one has been Roman Reigns in 3 years. So yeah, no. But yeah, as he said, he pushed him to his limit. They got 3 matches out of the feud. It was definitely one of the better feuds Roman Reigns had during this run. If they can revisit that and maybe even get Kevin Owens to a point where he could. Maybe he's a dark horse, but maybe he will. Maybe he could be the one to tend this ring.
Well, like you said, he's getting quite the reaction. People definitely love the stunner.
They do. They always have. it was a great thing to give him that as a finish. And it did lead to him finally. Amazingly, getting to Stone Cold Steve Austin in the main event of WrestleMania. still saying that happened. And then from there, he was able to, you know, after a little time in comedy purgatory with Ezekiel, which, once again, anything you gave him, he'll knock it out of the park.
Yeah, he killed that stuff.
She's able to turn back babyface after killing a man. And
no big deal. He just committed homicide.
Yeah. Okay. He ended a man. He just ended his career. He didn't kill him. Be an incredibly popular babyface again. And, you know, get the reactions. He's been getting, he definitely gets among the top reactions and babyface reactions in all of WWE, you know, so consistently. So yeah, no, whether this is, he gets another crack at Roman Reigns and, you know, maybe he doesn't, or if this, you know, the setup is more along the lines of him and Sami Zayn get back together and they go after the Usos and, you know, are the ones who end up beating them, you know. That works really well if they don't see Owens as the guy to beat Roman Reigns. Still, so much of that depends on what if The Rock's going to come back for WrestleMania, and as well as Cody Rhodes's recovery. They've got some options here. Once again, this whole thing with Sami Zayn, breathing new life into the bloodline. It should be a fun match, and even though no titles are at stake, I definitely see a major storyline twist that will reverberate through the remainder of the winter. I think something's gonna happen here. This Sami Zayn Jey Uso powder keg will probably explode, and I think the bloodline will suffer their first major loss, as a unit with Roman Reigns there, because keep in mind, even when there's been 6-man tags, they still win.
Yes.
When Roman Reigns is in the ring, they win. Roman Reigns doesn't lose, other than that one when they backed themselves in the corner at the Royal Rumble and had his match with Seth Rollins and a disqualification, which we mentioned a few weeks back. So, which was a mistake, because once again, to be able to say that Roman Reigns hasn't lost a match at all in like 3 years, they kind of screwed themselves out of that. but still, Roman Reigns like basically never loses, and
in a 3-year time period,
he's not gonna obviously he's not gonna obviously he's not gonna most likely not, I don't know, totally obviously, but very probably not going to be the one to take the pin here. But just the fact that they're going to lose while he's present will cause him to completely lose it on whoever gets pinned or whoever, you know, makes the mistake that cost him the match. So, major storyline repercussions are going to come out of this one.
And
on our way out of here, I guess we can move on to the women's match. Do you have something more to say about?
I was ready to go to the women.
It's 11:20 where you are right now. You still have to work in the morning. So let's get through this quick. Let's see. Last week, Mia Yim was added to the heel team was completed last week.
Yes.
By the addition of Rhea Ripley, the babyface team, but Bianca Belair's team, still needs one member. They will also not have the woman advantage, which in the history of war games, the babyface almost never has the advantage because it screws up the whole flow of the match. Now, at various points, they've tried it in TNA, and I think in NXT at least once, because... Well, that was the one where Dakota Kai turned on Tegan Nox and took her out of the match completely. So the match was fought as a 5-on-2 or 5-on-3s. So,
oh yeah, they got to the heel advantage in a different route.
That was actually very smartly done.
Yes.
In TNA when they did it, it was just stupid. So yes, but yes, the heels have the advantage here, and I imagine the heels will end up with the babyface advantage in the men's match as well. Bianca is promising that they will go to SmackDown to find their fifth partner, and I have ventured to guess that I think we'll turn out to be right that the fifth partner will turn out to be Liv Morgan, who has been on her own tear lately doing wild stuff. You know, War Games allows her the opportunity to get hardcore, to do violent stuff, to jump off the top of a cage, so she makes the most sense right now for to be the partner with the SmackDown element now added in. I mean, you can't if it's not Sasha Banks, if it's not Becky Lynch, you really can't rule in the Saturday with a mystery partner. And they're in Sasha's hometown, so you got to pull that Band-Aid off quick. That she is not coming back. She's not going to get
Yeah, it is probably for the best to actually announce this on SmackDown one way or the other. just to, like you said, kind of get the news out of the way, good and or bad, to kind of help out. It was kind of funny. I think I mentioned Beth Phoenix being a possibility. I do feel like that is less of a possibility now that we're moving... proceedings over to SmackDown, honestly, because they showed the Edge, Rhea, Beth Phoenix highlights after Rhea joined the heel team last week or just prior to that. So I thought, I was just thinking that maybe Beth was an option there. I would have thought, though, since they did that all on Raw, that they would have revealed her on Raw this week.
Beth will come back with Edge. You know, they'll do some sort of mixed tag at some point.
No.
But I'm feeling like they are going to use this match to transition Bianca from her feud with Damage Control to Rhea Ripley. So I'm gonna predict the heel victory here with Rhea Ripley coming out of top, possibly pinning Bianca. I think that makes the most sense.
They definitely seem to be playing into Bianca and Rhea being on a collision course, and honestly, there aren't a whole lot of challenges left for Bianca at this juncture. Because if she hasn't been on TV, Charlotte, I think, is on the list.
Charlotte's on the list because they had a couple matches on Raw last year, but
Not a full feud. You
know, no decision. So
yeah.
So and Charlotte's the only the only one of the horsewomen who Bianca's never beat. So you could certainly run that heading into WrestleMania if you wanted to, and and run Rhea at the Royal Rumble, and then transition Rhea into a mixed tag situation heading into WrestleMania with her and Finn against Beth and Edge. I guess would be the match.
Yeah, that would make a good deal of sense.
unless we end up winning the title, there's some possibilities there that Rhea could win the title.
That is definitely a matchup where I would not be. I thought that what was the last title match that Bianca had, and I felt like I was going to be on the not surprised if she lost it list for that one, but they didn't pull the trigger. Oh, against Bayley, second time around.
Bayley's second time around.
I suppose I'm like, oh, okay, I wouldn't be surprised if this happened, and then they didn't pull the trigger, and I guess it just kind of feels like each new feud I'm gonna go, oh, yep, I could see them finally doing it here, and we'll see if they actually go through with it this time. Yeah, that'll be an interesting one to watch moving forward, because they've definitely gotten some Rhea. If no one else has, Rhea Ripley has gotten a reboot out of this whole Judgment Day situation.
Yeah, she definitely has.
Because I'm not sure about Damian Priest's push ever since then. Finn, to me, has still been a little bit of a mixed bag so far. Dominic is just the chump of the group, so he's just where he's going to be for a while. there is that. Anything else to say? And I guess I agree with you too. I would imagine that Rhea Ripley ends up winning this thing. Like, it seems tailor made for that, because despite Bayley saying she's never been actually pinned by Bianca, which is also true, you lost twice. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Or come on, woman. No.
Yeah.
Off to the side for a little bit.
Yep. Bayley's gonna be, not in the title picture. I'm sure her and Becky will have some singles matches when Becky returns, because that's where the blame for the injury goes.
Oh.
So yeah, no. I mean, Bayley will probably be in a decent spot, but it's she's not gonna be champion. Anytime soon. I'm moving to SmackDown, that wouldn't help that either, because Ronda's holding that thing to WrestleMania as well. So it's probably not going to be Ronda versus Bayley at WrestleMania either.
Yeah, that seems like a weird matchup, especially now that Ronda's a heel.
So that won't happen. I mean, you could try to run Becky versus Ronda again after 4 years. It seems just absolutely ridiculous to do that, but it's not my company. instead of Bianca versus Charlotte, you could do Bianca versus Ronda. That would work as well.
Oh, but champion versus champion.
As far as what we're talking about. Bayley is not going to be in that top mix come WrestleMania. It feels like there's some preordained situations going on here, and she's not going to be part of it. And it doesn't feel like even if she came back that Sasha Banks would find her way into one of those two title matches either. So it's, you know, why would she come back either?
Yeah, it would be pretty tough to find for her to find herself back in there. You know, and there's always the easy solve situation of having someone win the Royal Rumble itself to catapult themselves back into that situation. But that's pretty much a one-way ticket. Like, if you're not, to me, if you're not getting it at the Rumble, you're out of that WrestleMania picture frame if you're just coming back, yeah. You know. So, yeah, very, very limited, doable, but very limited circumstances, in my opinion. I guess anything else to preview about War Game, well, Survivor Series, that really,
really
needs to be touched on? Okie doke.
Really.
Fair enough. We have gone long enough. We've gone long enough that I finished my Belltime beer incomplete this week. One of my favorite breweries here in town in Columbus, Wolf's Ridge Brewing Foderfest. It's their oak-aged Oktoberfest. A, love Oktoberfest beers. B, I am trying to clean out the fridge for some more wintry brews here. That was on the docket for consumption today. Very good. The Oak Age is probably a nice one. You don't have as much of a punch in the mouth from the Oak Age as you do from say the bourbon barrels. Those are a little more punchy in the face as far as the flavor goes. Oak is a little more subtle. So I think it goes along with the beer that is maybe not the most complex, but still quite tasty because Oktoberfest is a great beer. Anywho, if you're in Columbus, come to Wolf's Ridge Brewing, and I believe you can get it all throughout the state if you can order in that direction. So that is the hashtag belt on beer from Matt DeFrango 11. He is at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and download us at any number of locations, whether it's Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, or Google. Have a good night, grandkids.